Welcome back. Today's guest is a very special man. I am lucky enough to call him one of my best mates. It's Sam Doherty, the one and only. An unbelievable story of determination, grit, whatever you want to call it. The guy has a massive dog in him. He doesn't give up. And he, as you'll hear, his story is one that I urge you all to listen to from start to finish. The Baggers are on a roll. I tried to tell him that they're going to win the flag and encourage him to say that as well, but he's not taking the lid off right now. I am. Enjoy the episode. It's one of the best.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the Dan Knows Footy Podcast. You can find more of Dan Knows Footy on the website, Spotify, YouTube, and social media. Good job. See ya.
There was heaps of sick kids and I was like, where are they? Kick him harder. Kick him all harder. Punch him in the face. I'm bloody horizontally challenged, if you get what I mean. Oh no. Tough crowd today. Should we say this is the line? If you don't hear the next bit, it's over the line. Okay, so if you don't hear the next bit, I've got a line. This is more past punt road. He dips in.
Before we do start, I think that it'd be a good idea maybe if you give me a compliment, like something, you know, thank you so much for helping us last year. The boys were so inspired. Just give me a compliment because I am nervous and I know you are the guest, but I think it'd just be a nice thing to do.
Nah.
Okay, guys, today's guest is a big one. It's Sam Doherty. Sam, you were just telling me off air you have something to say straight up.
No, okay. Nothing.
We do have a big guest, as I've said. Sam, thank you for joining us, mate. You are the first guest of Dan Does Footy, and you're in the locker room. Thoughts are good. You like this thing?
Yeah, I like it. Done well. You've got going here, mate.
Thanks.
It's interesting. There's your compliment, but
thank you.
No, it's very professional.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Which is great.
I don't know. Ollie probably didn't tell you, but he went to the gym for the first time in how long?
8 months.
Do you have a microphone on you?
Yeah, I've got one. Cool, cool. Yeah.
And you've done a bicep. So we're not just going to ignore that fact because you sent me a photo last night in a sling and you haven't brought the sling in. Is it because Sam's here?
Yeah, I want to act tough. I wanted to act tough in front of my girlfriend who's a Pilates instructor last night. That didn't work
out.
It
was unbelievable. Yeah. You sending me a bicep, full bicep tear, you reckon?
I reckon bicep into forearm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's...
But it was at the gym, I promise.
Fair enough. Mate, you can be relaxed here. It's just an SEN. I know you are a very good performer on your 3RWs, your SENs, but this is relaxed. You can tell us things that you wouldn't tell anyone else here. Yesterday, we spoke about the 19 players who are earning $1 million. How much money do you earn?
Funnily enough, I've actually been asked this on the piss by one of our mutual friends.
Oh my God, you have as well. Yes, you have. It's such an awkward question.
Over the space of your wedding.
Twice, I reckon.
Yeah, I got interrogated about how much I earn, which is a bit awkward. But yeah, I'm a long way off those 19 trucks at the top.
I also, yesterday when we spoke about it, when we were recording, I went through what I was on. I'd love for you to have a guess at what you think, because you play with me. What do you think my highest contract was or would have been?
I feel like you would have been 180 in matches.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's very good.
Is that what you think he was on at Gold Coast or Carlton?
I reckon it would have been Gold Coast.
Yeah. Very good. 175, I think we said, didn't we? And matches. That's great. You should be. That's too much. Way overs. Even I said it's way overs. But I do have a bone to pick with you straight away. And we did speak about it before we started recording. But you and I had a heated argument over one of the breaks recently. One of your breaks. I'm never on break. I'm always on. But we spoke about, and again, back to my career, what would you rather be? Someone who could have been anything or a bloke who just got the most out of himself, played 41 games. So the reference was me being anything, like I generally could have been anything, which I think you to a point might admit.
Yeah, well, I did agree with you. You could have been anything.
Yeah.
That you were lacking the habits and the work ethic to kind of get to that.
Well, you and I had contrasting styles. But and then you said that you'd rather be a Nick Graham who just like got the most out of himself.
Yeah, well, I guess that's probably a little bit of where my respect goes of my teammates and that I've had over the years. I've always been one that loves the guy that gets as much as they possibly can out of themselves. And they mightn't be the most talented guys in the room, but they tend to forge great careers and be some of the better teammates you've had. And we had this argument that you think that it's better to just have in the back of your mind that you could have been Dusty at one point. And
I think so. It's better for the ego to be like, I definitely could have been anything.
Yeah, well.
But I think it's hard for you because you're, and we'll talk about it, you were pick 12, so you've lived up to the expectations, mate. Like you have. You've done Australian BNF wins. Like you have lived up to it. But someone like me who just hasn't got near it, but I know internally I could have. It's a very different mindset. Like I just, I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like we're not going to agree on this because you're firm in your camp. I feel like I'm firm. And you took a lot of offense out of me taking Nixon.
I was pretty angry. Yeah. It was, we were at some kind of day thing and we got pretty heated towards each other. And it was a long, like 40-minute argument. But look, we'll agree to disagree on there. First impressions of you and I meeting, I came into your territory at Carlton.
What was my first impressions of you?
Yeah.
You didn't, like a lot of my friends, we probably weren't great friends in footy.
No.
Maybe because you lacked work ethic.
Which you hate at the start.
Which we've just spoken about that I don't enjoy. So, you didn't speak much for...
I was very quiet.
...for the first year, which is a bit unlike you now that I know you. But sort of quiet, went about your business, and then you sort of developed your own little crew that used to sit in the back of the room and your personality started coming out. And I found you pretty funny. And
thanks, mate. Well, you're right. We were super different. You and I were very different when we first met. You are... And you still are disciplined and like hardworking and I'm going to put this team on my back and you better get on or fucking get out of the way. But I was like, I'm just picking up a paycheck here. Like literally, I'm happy to play twos, be on my whatever I'm on and just get out of here. But you are going through preseason. You're almost at the back end of it now. How's that body? 30 years old now?
Yeah, 30.
Getting on.
I am. I'm feeling every bit of it.
Mm.
I suppose when you have... 150 surgeries or whatever.
You've had a few, haven't you?
I've had a few. So there is lingering effects of each one. But no, I was able to do a lot of load this preseason, which has been great because I haven't, with some of my cancer surgeries and ops and chemo and stuff, I really haven't done a preseason for about 5 years. So although I came in with an off-season surgery this year, I was pretty much able to do the whole load through preseason. So we play... this week, which is exciting because, as you know, in footy, when that program swaps over from preseason mode to in-season mode, it's heaven. So we're just getting into that now. So the repeatable 13K sessions, sort of 2.5 times of your game load during the week is down. So excited to get started, to be honest.
Yeah. What do you get at, like, for someone like me when I was playing, it was very much like, I need to impress here. But you who, like, you obviously solidified yourself. You're a Carlton legend, superstar. What do you get out of preseason like you? Is it just literally being like, who am I working with, defenders around me? Is it, let's get the game plan right? Or is it literally just a ticker box, get the cobwebs out?
I think probably elements of all.
Yeah.
I still have the drive to want to impress and I think you need that in footy because if you don't have that, then you tend to just tick boxes and get through and you don't actually get any better and you do have to realise that there's young guys coming in every year and guys making big gains in their game.
Yeah.
So if you don't try and get better and come back in really good shape and try and make gains in your game, even at my age, then guys will take over you. And I have that, but then I also have probably the level of knowing my body and knowing what it needs to be able to be right for the season. And it's probably something that I've learned over the years to be able to make sure that making gains but not tipping myself over the edge. I think early in my career I probably tipped myself over the edge and went into seasons with lingering injuries and which ended up impacting my ability to perform in season. So there's lessons and there's probably elements of both. I don't know. I'm quite a good runner at our group and we've got like or six guys that are well in front of me these days and I'm sort of doing the same thing. It's just showing the new athlete is coming. Like we've got like 5 or 6 guys can run under 6 minute 2Kers.
Crazy.
Which like flying. When I first started, I don't think anyone would have been near. Ed would have been probably the only one that was near it. So the caliber of athlete coming through these days, the kids are so professional. They come in and they pretty much jump to the top of the tree in terms of some of the athletic profile. So you gotta keep your skates on otherwise.
Crazy. Well, you can run because you took me for an absolute run on my wedding day. Both probably a little bit under the weather the night before and you just burnt me all the way for 10K. So you definitely can run. Back on preseason, this is all foreign to me because I just, as I said, we had very different mindsets about careers. Do you consciously make an effort each preseason to improve on something for the season ahead? Do you look back and go, you know what, good, like last year, for instance, great season, but I didn't like how I did this. Let's work on that in the preseason. Or not? Or you just rock up and let's evolve and see how we go?
Nah, pretty targeted in what I go after. This year's been, because I played a lot of midfield minutes last year, I probably learned over the back end of the year that my body needed to be a little bit stronger. Playing halfback, that was not a sort of prerequisite to playing halfback. You don't get a lot of hits. You don't, not a heap of contested work, whereas in the midfield you do. So I sort of needed to make sure that, one, I needed to put some size on my upper body. That's part of probably why my shoulder ended up going, because I didn't put much focus into my gym program in my uppers last year. And I definitely needed to do a bit more of that this year to be able to, not so much like play better, but to play more consistently, to be able to take the bumps and hits. And so that was a bit of a focus coming in. And then a lot of around sort of the stoppage connection was my big goal this year, was to be able to make sure, one, I'm all over it, and not just from a knowledge level of being able to do it, but understanding the way that the system works, where everyone should be, understanding who I'm working with, what their strengths are, what my role is outside of that. So being able to put in a fair bit of study and sort of thinking time around what that looks like, and then actually training it was probably the other thing I really went after this year. So I think preseason is a good time to build connection with your teammates and understanding what everyone's strengths is. The reality is you're playing a team sport. You need guys to play their way, and then everyone needs to offset each other and allow each other to flourish in their parts and hide the deficiencies in others. So it's been a preseason of probably thinking that way.
I've got to ask you on your shoulder, just because it's come back to me then. So you pop a shoulder out, Demons prelim? Demons
semi,
final,
semi. Yeah.
Demons semi. Ball gets kicked to you. Someone comes across you, can't remember who, and you go up both arms. This is the sequence where Akers kicks a goal.
Yeah.
You go up both arms. Two questions. Did you, was it just a, I'm getting this ball, no conscious effort of the shoulder?
I was probably lucky that, so when I came back on from my shoulder.
Because he came in hot, that goal.
I actually didn't know he was there.
Okay.
But before that, I when I came back on, I think it was like after halftime or whenever it was, I had a mark in D50, so I ran as a player, as a wing, I ran down to defensive 50, and I had to go up for a mark. And at that, before that, all I'd done was a very, very funny sort of fitness test with one of our VFL boys, Sam Durden, who was playing. He was at one of our emergencies, and we did like the worst fitness test of all time.
One of those ones where it's like, just see if it's okay, and then just the staff was like, get him out there, just go.
There was a lot of dudes acting like he was trying to hit me quite hard and me trying to act like nothing hurt. And to be honest, it wasn't great. But then, I was lucky. In my first probably 3 minutes on the ground, I had a ground ball that I had to take, and then I had an overhead mark in defensive 50. If I dropped it, it's a certain goal. Yeah. So I sort of ticked off a couple of the mental hurdles pretty quickly in the quarter. By the back end of the game, that was full adrenaline. I don't think about it at all.
Of course you wouldn't be. And mate, we were there. I was absolutely blind. But I just remember seeing that sequence and being like, oh, my God. First of all, I saw it unfolding. I saw you out in the wing and whoever it was come across you. I was like, he's have to go upstairs and get up this ball. His shoulder's cooked. And then my second question is, when you booted it forward, did you mean to pick anyone out? Because it looked to me, as a drunk spectator, this bloke's having a ping from 70.
I'm not a great long kick for goal on the run. Yeah. So I knew I didn't have it in me. The hard thing was, there was actually, like, I don't think many people have looked behind the goals, but there's a lot of people free inside 50. And
it's hard to kick.
I was like, I didn't know who, like Charlie was free in the pocket. I think Tom DeConning was leading up at me, and then I had a 3v1 in the goal square, which was Blake, who's a winger, not supposed to be there.
No.
Gov, who's one of our backmen, and Kempe, who's one of our backmen.
So they're all in there.
They're all in the goal square.
Just stream forward.
So I think they've gone the all-out offensive play, and I don't know how. It's very – like Blake kicks the goal, and it's Gov and Kempe celebrating with him.
Crazy.
So, looking back now, I saw a 2v1 in the goal square. I thought, well, we're the best chance of winning
just
that one,
go.
So let's just get it there. So.
Mate, unreal. Like I said, just like literally probably the best game I've ever been to, and we'll get to it in the back end because I circle back to it eventually. But your story here, and it's just, as I texted you last night, it's just you're an amazing human being, and what you've been through is just wild. Everything that we're going to talk about, and we're going to literally dissect your journey from start to finish. Normally, this stuff that happens to you, to any other player, the system and the history tells us that you don't play long as you should. You don't come out the other side as good as you have. And I wouldn't be doing your story and the listeners justice if we don't go step by step through the roller coaster. So I want to go back to Phillip Island, because I've been to Phillip Island, to your house one night, and kind of driving through Phillip Island, not a lot to do there as a kid. Am I right in saying that or not?
Oh.
Okay, here is. There's something, is there?
Penguins.
Have you been there? Have you been there? Have you?
Yeah, penguins.
Yeah, there's penguins.
There is,
yeah.
Penguins, yeah.
Yeah, there's the penguins there. Now, there's, it's like any country town.
Yeah.
Like, the difference with Phillip Island is there's a lot of events that happen there, and it swells on Easter weekend.
Got the motorbikes.
The motorbikes.
Yeah.
They got the V8s, the superbikes. Like, there's a lot of bits and pieces that happen.
Yeah.
So it sort of goes from, but when there's no one there.
No.
There's no one there.
There's a lot of penguins.
But then everyone comes down. There's a lot of penguins. Have you actually seen the penguins?
No, well, I did some study that the population was 7,000. The population of penguins down there is 40,000. So it's like, what's that? I don't know the conversion on that, but it's a lot of penguins.
Yeah. Have to pay to see them.
You have to pay to see them.
Oh, it's a stitch up.
It's a money-making exercise.
That's a genuine stitch up.
You go there and you wait for them and they waddle up the beach and then.
They got chlamydia as well.
Really?
They do.
Koalas of the sea.
I made that up. I don't know. I said that. That's not. Okay, so not a lot of penguin. How about childhood? Mum, dad, Annabelle, Eddie, yep. Growing up, Josh, brother.
Yep.
Normal childhood?
Yeah, I was very fortunate as a kid. My mum and dad provided a great environment for myself and my brother. And yeah, like they looking back now, you don't know this at the time, but they probably taught us a lot of habits that have been really healthy moving forward. Some unhealthy, which I'm sure we'll unpack at some stage. But yeah, my parents gave me and Josh everything that we needed.
Yeah.
Probably didn't come from the wealthiest family, and mum worked full time. Dad worked two jobs, milked the cows in the morning, and then ran his own building business. And then when that got too hard, he ended up working at the Penguin Parade,
as well as
milking. So we sort of grew up half on the farm, half at home. So very lucky. Looking back now, I'm probably becoming a parent now. I probably realise how great of a job my parents did, and doesn't guarantee you all successes in life, but they definitely set me on my journey.
It's crazy when someone said this to me the other day. It's like, be gentle on your parents because it's their first time parenting too. And I'm sure you now, having Ruby, would be like, whoa, this is a lot harder than I probably gave credit for.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you tend to realise that none of us know what we're doing. So
no, fuck no.
So all parents are just trying to figure it out as they go. And it's funny when you leave hospital with your first child, it's like you get in the car and it's like you're sort of sitting there going, like, is there a handbook of what we're supposed to do? Like, what they're just giving us this baby to go home with, and we don't really know what we're doing. And there's still elements of that now. Like, Nat and I are still trying to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's a great ride, and it definitely gives you the appreciation of what your parents did for you. And the thing you do realize is everything that you do as a parent, generally kids pick up on them. So all the habits and personality traits, as much as they're probably born with some, that a lot of it is picked up off the influential people in their life. It doesn't have to be parents, but there's a sort of inner circle of what your kids are around. They're going to have a significant influence on who they are in the future.
For sure, for sure. And you I was doing a bit of research on just, again, I know it, but I wanted to make sure that we do it the best way possible. You wrote this, and I can't remember if it's in The Age or The Herald, but you said, as a kid growing up on Phillip Island, the annual bus trip to the MCG was always the event of the year. You see, I was brainwashed from birth and supporting Carlton by my blues mad father, Eddie. That bus trip just off its head, was it?
Yeah, well, we used to, thinking back now, but used to leave school early on. I think it was a Friday. I don't think it was always a Thursday night, but Friday night to go to the Richmond versus Carlton game. Young kids with a bunch of the dads. Now, these days I know that they just got absolutely blind.
You know exactly what they're going to do.
There must have been a designated driver. Yeah. I hope there was. But, it was like great memories. We didn't go to many games.
Yeah.
Been Phillip Island 2 hours away. It's a fair trek to get up to watch it. Much football. So we didn't go to too many, but that there was a lot of Richmond supporters and a lot of Carlton supporters in sort of my dad's friendship group. So we used to roll up there on the minibus. Someone would drive us up, go to the game and watch the game, and then drive home.
Roll back down.
The dads would be blind, the kids would be asleep.
So the payoff was for them to just take you boys or who was there, and they could just get on the piss and then get home.
Yeah, essentially.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Awesome. Is that your first footy memory? Like, what's your first memory of being like, shit, I think I'd like football?
I don't know. Like, my family grew up, Josh and I grew up basically at the footy club. So between my mum and my dad coached nearly every age group possible at the football club. Mum was a committee member at stages. We were spending 3 to 4 nights a week. I think one year my dad was coaching, I think it was so I was playing under 15s and he was coaching the reserves. He was coaching two teams on one day. So we spent a hell of a lot of time there growing up. Like I remember when dad was coaching the under 18s, I would have been about 10 and training with the under 18s. Mm. My earliest footy memory is probably just Auskick, which is most kids, I think.
Yeah.
I think Auskick was on a Friday night, so it was at night time. So you do the Auskick again. Parents get pissed at the footy club, and the kids we just run free for the whole night, have a feed, and then go home. But probably one of my favourite memories of footy was my first senior game. I played with my brother.
Yeah.
Looking back now, it's probably pretty special to me because I got to play a period of time. Growing up, I didn't think I'd be playing AFL footy, so I thought we'd just playing senior footy at Phillip Island with me and him. And looking back now, I was sort of lucky. I played really young and he was playing at the same time. We got to play a few years before I have gone on and done my career elsewhere.
People always say when they have a brother and the other one makes AFL, they said that their brother was probably better. Was Josh better or not?
He was. Like elements. I would say that. If we're going back to the conversation earlier, I think he was more talented than I was.
Yeah.
But country footy, I think there's a lot of gems out there that just don't get the opportunity. They just don't get noticed, or for whatever period of their life, they weren't the most mature at that stage and weren't able to make the teams that they need to get noticed. Whereas in the city, you get every opportunity.
Yeah.
You get forced into those programs. Whereas in the country, it's just a little bit different. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot of guys in the country that probably would have been great AFL players that just – for whatever reason, didn't get that chance and didn't
get
the opportunity.
I can relate. It's all politics, speaking from my experience in the AFL.
He'll love listening to this, me telling him.
Really?
More talented. Good,
I'm glad you're here now. Tell him that, that's great. Footy memories, our football memories are a bit different because my first one is my old man taking me down to Redwood Park, me and him with a footy, and then he'd stand 20 metres away from me and he would just boot a high ball 50 metres in the air and it would hang for about 4, 5, 6 seconds. And then he'd just sprint at me and I'd have to stand under it because he was trying to teach me courage. But now when I explained that to him, Dad, I said, that's not a drill. Like, I think you were just born with courage. Like, if you're not built like that, you're not built like that. And every Friday we'd go to the park and he'd just run at me and sometimes he'd come through and clip me in the ribs.
There's a bit of if you can't dodge a wrench, you can't dodge a
ball exactly,
mentality.
Yeah. So that just made me think about how our memories are so different. I'm sure no one's playing the courage game with you. So, Tack Cup. And, guys, it is going to be a journey because we have to lay it all out just to see you and your story. But you obviously play down at Phillip Island, Tac Cup. Now, you get picked – you're picked 12 when you go to Brizzy. Mm-hmm. You said somewhere that you didn't think you were going to go that high. But surely, because I knew I was going that high, I just naturally as a junior, you know that I'm better than this kid. Like, I'm getting a lot of the footy. Surely you knew, like, I'm going – high here, first roundish.
No, well, even in juniors, I was probably never the best kid in the team, and even through playing sort of the under 15s carnivals, under 16s carnivals for Gippsland Power, I was never on like the A team.
You're in the possibles.
I was in the possibles.
That's
the
rare probables for you as well. You would have hated that.
Then when I got to the under 18s, I got injured in my bottom age year in the tryouts, so I didn't get picked for the squad and then sort of got picked in the squad for the under 18s. And that year was a bit of a whirlwind, to be honest. I went from like no one knew who I was, not on any draft boards anywhere, to played half of the year, went and tried out for Vic Country, got cut from Vic Country. And then I was probably lucky that Vic Country played poorly in the first two games. Mm. I kept playing well at Tac Cup. So then my opportunity came in the it was our third game. We played Western Australia at Geelong, and I played really well in big country, and I sort of went from like nowhere to probably going to get drafted.
Yeah.
And that was probably where I was at, and that's that part. And then I went on to play the next game, played really well against Vic Metro, and went from probably could get drafted to potential first rounder.
Yeah.
Played well throughout the back end of the year at TAC Cup. So I went from probably could have been first rounder to somewhere in the 10s to
crazy.
10 to 20. So when we went to draft camp, a lot of guys probably don't get interviewed with that many clubs because they sort of know the range they're at. I got interviewed by every team other than GWS, which was sauce.
Yeah.
So I think no one really knew where I was going. And then as the draft firmed up, it was sort of like even on the last mock drafts and that they do, I was sort of like 18 to 20. Then the day before I was like, oh, Richmond are going to take him at 15, and then end up went to 12 to Brisbane. So
crazy.
Just a crazy year. And then I think the lesson for anyone watching that wants to become an AFL player is that everyone's journey is different. It's, you don't have to make every AIS team.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I know. you don't have to. That's not the – there's even SSP that weighs in the AFL system these days. So it's just, everyone's journey is so different, and you just got to take your opportunity when you get one.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Amy, can we please get some water when you're – you can leave that in, Ollie. No, it's all good. We're all raw. Just keep it raw. I like it raw.
Sparkling or still.
Yeah. So did you want to leave Melbourne? We obviously know you go to Brisbane now, but did you want to leave Melbourne? Because I didn't want to leave Adelaide, and when I got taken to the Gold Coast, I was really upset. Like, cried in my room.
No, I was honestly not fussed where I went.
Okay.
I was happy just getting picked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the hard thing about the draft is you don't know where you're going, and it could be home, it could be away from home. But pre-draft, I was just happy getting on an AFL list, so I didn't care at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's such an SEN question, but they keep saying every year the draft is too young, it's too young. I felt it was too young because I just wasn't ready to move out of home. Like, do you have the same thing, or do you reckon let them play, they have to play VFL sample to the 2021, or is it just like they're ready, take them, pluck them?
No, I don't think it's too young. I think the expectation on – the external expectation on kids coming in and probably somewhat – the internal expectation of those kids coming in is probably too great. AFL is a bloody hard game, and the consistency of playing it week in, week out on your body is hard. And the top five picks are like essentially crazy. Expected to come in to be superstars within their first year, and that's the reality of that is really, really hard. And I think even for those kids, like they get pumped up so much these days, and everyone knows who they are before they come in the system. So they almost walk into the system thinking it's probably going to be easier than it is, and they're just going to be superstars, which, again, is not the reality. It's a bloody hard game. But
there's
probably positives and negatives for both. I look at it, you get kids in and you get to teach them the habits that are required, but then there is a lag effect of when guys get that. So,
yeah,
it's hard for guys to perform in that first year.
It is hard. I mean, I feel bad. The one that obviously sticks out at the moment is Harley Reid. Like, he went from last year, a little bit of talk, like he's obviously going to go number one, and goes to West Coast on the back page of every paper, and it's like, you now win games for West Coast, which could, and as a senior player, not that I'm playing, but I'd be like, you know what, fuck him. Not that I love Harley, I think he's a great player, but I'd be like, you know what, let's show the media and Perth that this kid isn't ready yet. So now you've got eyes on you. Senior players being like, well, hold on, I'm still our turf. Welcome to the AFL. It is just like this immense pressure cooker. So, I mean, I don't know. Walshy, I guess, went through the same thing, and he's come out the other side. But
well, I think
Harley is like a crazy at the moment. All this Harley
and,
stuff.
And the hard thing for Harley at the moment is probably the expectation of what he should be in, I say should, is he's supposed to be a superstar. So it's like if he's anything below that, potentially that's a very hard thing to have to battle with in your career. And we sort of saw that with Walshy. Walshy had an unbelievable first year and then still had people saying that, nah, he's not talented. And,
Gaunty.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's
it's the natural thing. It's going
to
happen.
Walshy couldn't have had much better of a year. And that's what guys come in these days and they have to deal with. And that's the new world that is probably, it's part of AFL. It's part of the job now that you have to deal with everything external that happens at a footy club. And sometimes you sort of get picked up and you just think it's footy. It's not footy anymore. There's a more broader conversation.
And that thing, it's like a full-time job.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're the same, but you get there to a club and it's – I thought we were going to do the same thing in the Sandford. Like, I just come in on a Tuesday, Thursday, I'll train for a couple of hours, I'll bounce, and I'll see you guys on Saturday for a game. But it's like Monday, Tuesday, like, you know, the schedule is cooked. Like, you get no time.
Well, it's the schedule, and then it's the everything in your life has an impact to the way you play footy. And I'm sure that not every AFL player thinks that way. Mm. And I know a lot of guys that do, but I know a lot of guys that don't. But what you're doing on your day off affects your ability
massively
on game day, because it's the time in your legs and everything. So it's like,
there's elements of
you need to think about what you're putting in your body, what you're doing with your body, how's that going to affect your ability to perform? Because if you don't perform, then there's contracts, there's external media pressures, there's internal reviews. So, have a consistent long career, you need to think about a lot of stuff.
It's actually draining. And I only say this, it's not about me at all, but as we talk, so much shit comes back to me. But I was at a point where I thought having butter and bread was going to be the reason why I wasn't playing good footy. Like, you get to such an extreme point in your head where you're like, I can't go for like a walk a day before the game because, you know, I've got a game and I've got to save my energy. I can't have butter and bread because my skin folds will be fucked. It's all consuming all the time.
Yeah, and that's the job. That's what we do, get paid really, really good money. And I'm not saying it's a negative. I'm just saying that that's the part of the job that's probably a bit hidden to a lot of people, that a lot of people probably don't understand that. There's pressures in every part of your life in terms of what you're doing, and some thrive in that environment and a lot don't, and that's the reality of where our game's at. We're a very professional game.
And then you get those supporters who watch the game like, oh, I wish I was getting fucking paid $500,000 to be a footballer. So it's shut the fuck – no, it's not. Like, you have no – like, you've just kind of labelled out like what actually goes into it, but shut the – like, you have no idea. Like, it's – for 10 months, even more, it's all consuming. Every day is related back to your central hub of footy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just crazy, as you said. But we went off course, we'll come back. Brisbane, drafted a Brizzy. They came 15th that year. Vossi the coach?
Yep. Vossi coached me in my first year and a half.
Same Vossi now, or learned a lot and better now?
Well, I'd say learned a lot better now, but that's what happens when you learn the most when you probably fail, really. Yep. And he's an unbelievable coach now. I'm seen a fair few coaches on my time in footy.
Which we will talk about.
But I think he's got as close to near perfect of what today's coach is, and his ability to be firm but have care, and sort of you still need that. In elements, you still need to know who you are and you need to know what you are, and he has that definitely. But his ability to talk and communicate with the players, but more importantly, his coaches, and empower them to be great coaches as well is pretty amazing. So, different, but I would say that I was 18 years old, so I didn't know what I was looking at. So, like, I'm walking past him in the corridor, shit scared to talk to him. Like,
he's very scared.
He's a legend of AFL footy. In my first year, I was so scared to even have a conversation with him. Is that different to now, or have I just grown up? I don't. There's probably elements of both. I know if you listen to him speak, he speaks a lot about his time away and learning from Brisbane. The relationship piece is what he's put so much time and effort, and communication is where he's sort of put his tickets. And he's definitely doing a great job with our group, and
doing a very good job.
Well, it's probably both. It's like he came to a group that was ready to have him as a coach, and we're sort of all blending well together at the moment. So
I mean, the first half was a bit rough last year.
Yeah.
And don't tell me that camp was the reason why things changed. That's bullshit. Something must have fucking changed, because you can't be that shit and poor for the first half of the year and then be like, we're the best team for the next 14 weeks.
Yeah. There's some very fine details.
Whatever's down to Ed Curnow's farm, give me some. I want some of that shit.
Some pizzas and the dam. We made some minor changes in terms of our game plan, definitely. But they weren't like wholesale stuff. It was like really nitty gritty defense and pressure stuff that you probably don't notice that much. You probably notice the feel of it and watching it. But in terms of the individual actions of the speed we were about to put pressure on in contest, and our ability to fix up our mistakes and have a defense first lens was probably the big sort of mindset change. But there's elements of it just we all bought in. So like we all sort of had a focus. That was part of the reason for the fire down at Ed's was to, as a playing group, there was stuff coming from everywhere. There's pressures. There was
Well, no, it wasn't
so much about that. But like externally, there was like Krippa shouldn't be captain anymore. Vossi should be sacked. Like that's where the environment was.
And you stayed at a different hotel as well.
I went to apparently. Nat stays at a different hotel.
Yeah, Nat does as well. Yeah, exactly. That's true.
But yeah, then there's a lot happening at that stage. And there's a lot of intense pressure on the footy club, which is what Carlton is. But it can be a great thing because we saw in the back end of the year, the momentum wave's huge, but it can be hard to deal with at times. But no, that night was designed around as players being able to go down there and just be open with everyone about how we're feeling and what's happening with the club and what's holding us back. But more importantly, it was more just everyone getting on the page of getting everything out. And then let's all narrow down to something that's really simple that we can all do and all focus on. And we turned everything in the footy club towards the defense. We're a defense first team. And if you speak to anyone at the club, that's what we are. And that's from the way we train, the way we speak in meetings, the language you use on our offense is more about the way we defend to get the ball back. And we made small little subtle changes there and then put a heavy focus on pressure, which is probably the noticeable thing that changed. And it's funny, it's not massive things, bit of connection and a bit of defensive pressure, and that changed the whole game.
Mate, it looked different as a genuine nuff-nuff. It looked a lot different half-time, maybe after the first quarter of that Gold Coast game. It was like something has dropped here and it's just a different Blues team.
Yeah, and there's elements of it all clicked at once.
And it just went, off you went. Yeah. Brizzy, when you get there, Do you get to Brizzy and think, I'm spending 13 years here? This is my whole career's in Brizzy? Or do you get there and go, because at the time it was a bit of a flaming heap. They were going really bad. When you leave, there's a max exodus. So I'm sure that was a groundswell happening already. Did you get there going, I'll be here for a while?
Yeah, I did. I had no intentions of leaving when I first got to Brizzy. My first 2 years didn't go the way I wanted to go. I was injured when I got there, didn't play at all in my first year, second year.
What'd you have? Hip?
I had hip surgery as soon as I got there, and that's basically lost all my preseason. So then spent basically the first half of the year trying to get fit for AFL footy, started playing some really good games in the knee full in the back end of the year, but didn't get picked. So then went away in that off season, worked my ass off to get fit. I don't know the exact time, but I think I wiped 30 seconds off my 2K time trial, came back in great shape.
Wow.
Got sore in the back end of that pre-season in my back. So set me back a little bit and then debuted in round four. Then that year was just sort of a bit messy. I think I was sub six out of my first 13 games. Yeah. It was hard to get continuity of playing AFL, playing VFL, what every young kid goes through.
And the NEFL was fucked back then. Did you play when we were playing like Mount Gravatt and stuff?
Yeah, if we played with more than probably 10 AFL listed players, we're winning by 100 points.
Yeah, so you get nothing out of it.
We won the flag that year.
Yeah.
We had some great players playing in that team. And we played really well. But there's always the lure of coming back when things aren't going your way as much. There was a lot happening at the footy club at that stage. There's board overthrow murmurings. Yeah. Vossi gets sacked with about six games to go or five games to go. Then you've got a lot of clubs saying, oh, come home. In the end, the decision I thought was best for my career was to come back to Melbourne and play footy here. And Carlton ended up being the team that I chose, and lucky enough to interview with a number of teams back in Melbourne, and Carlton was the standout of where I thought was the best fit for me to play a long AFL career in footy. And I've definitely been able to do that, although very interrupted. But I think maybe if you play, as I was saying before, the expectations of kids coming through, I was young, naive, thought I'd play 200 games for Brizzy. And when that path doesn't go the way you want, although very immature, the opportunity and the feeling of being wanted by the footy clubs is that's part of what happens. Yeah. And you're an emotional roller coaster trying to go through, work out what's going on with your life. And, I, I made the decision to, it wasn't so much I was homesick, which is what the the narrative is in the external.
It always is though.
Yeah, and that's but that's fine. That's the back then that was the thing that everyone just hid behind it was homesick, and then that's what happened. But there's probably a little bit more to it than just that.
I think you said it and I've got it here because I also said did some research before, but you said that feeling of being wanted, and when those clubs do want you, you're like, well, I want to feel wanted. I don't want to feel like I'm in and out of the team or I'm not, you know, valued here. So it's only natural to want that. And the Doggies was one of those teams that wanted you, and then they won a flag.
Yeah. Well, Melbourne and the Dogs both have won flags.
Ever think shit or not? Or what could have been? I know you won't say it because we love the Blues and you love the Blues, and as I said, you'll be a Hall of Famer, but do you ever sit there and go, fuck, could have been me?
Yeah, not particularly. I take a fair bit of joy out of, although it's been bloody hard, to be able to build something from essentially, I probably got there on the slight little the decline and then the bottom, the pit, and then
literally bottom. Yeah.
To come back out the other side, and Cripper and I have been like on that journey together. Mm. I think we're the only two left now. Ed was there last year, but to feel like you built something, and hopefully we can win a flag at the back end of my career. I've now got to a position where if that doesn't happen, I'll be okay with that, which is probably the perspective that I've gained over my career. If you asked me that 5-6 years ago, I would have been 100% shattered. If I, like, don't get me wrong, I want to win a flag, but I just don't think my career is going to be defined by that.
No,
which I think is a healthier mindset. Still trying to win the flag definitely drives me.
I think so
considerably, but I think for whatever it's worth, of my career could have gone completely different if I went. So there's a lot of what ifs if I'm at the Dogs or at Melbourne that things might have happened in a different way, and I might, who knows, could be out of the system. You just don't know. So, I'm a big believer in your journey is meant to teach you things in life,
and your journey has,
being and coming to Carlton and going through what we've gone through has taught me some of the bigger values that I have in my life. So it's
also your life experience as well. Yeah, taught you so much that probably make footy now that you're the back end of it, you're like, footy is just, it's footy. At the end of the day, we love it and you love it. And of course you'd love one in a flag, but life is so big.
Yeah. Well, footy is not everything to me anymore. And it was at one point.
It was. Probably when
it was probably to an unhealthy level. So being able to gain some perspective and some distance, and I still love footy and I have a lot of drive to be the best and take Carlton to the next premiership. But at the same time, I don't go home dwelling on what happened during that day, and I'm more present for my friends and my family, and I think that's a really healthy thing now.
Mm.
I wish I'd sort of knew it a little bit earlier in my career.
Yeah, well, you could have joined me, mate. Just pick up a paycheck and we could have been early together. This episode of Dan Does Footy is brought to you by Sportsbet. If you're not on Sportsbet at the moment, you're living under a rock. I was at the pub the other day with a few mates and we wanted to put a multi on, and one guy got his phone out and I looked over and it wasn't the Sportsbet app, and we told him to leave immediately. So thank you, Sportsbet, for being an amazing partner of the Dan Does Footy show. We have some huge things coming this year with our mates at Sportsbet, so keep your eyes out, especially in March. Something big is coming. That first preseason, so bottom of the barrel with the Blues, Flagstaff.
Yeah.
Shithole.
Yeah. Well,
absolute shithole.
Well, my Flagstaff experience in Arizona.
Which we're going to talk about,
Which was, it was horrible. Yeah. So
I just remember Flagstaff, for those, just to paint a picture, just not that it's important at all, but you go there to do a preseason training camp.
Yeah.
And it's freezing cold, it's high altitude, and you're running everywhere. I don't know if you did. We did the Suns. We ran everywhere.
We were snowing by the time we got there. So
awesome. Great. That's good. That's a good thing.
Good spot to go for a free camp with some snow.
And then they take you up this mountain. Can't remember the mountain. I'm sure you did it. Mount something. Did you do the mountain?
Yeah, we did the mountain.
And then they take you up there, and what we did, in groups of six, every 10 minutes, groups of six leave the bottom, the base, and you go up. Anyway, you all catch each other at the top and the guy's like, okay. And it's blowing absolute gale up there, like life or death up there. And the instructor was like, okay, I'm going to go to the summit and see if you guys can get up there. He's taken off 50 meters and blokes almost rolled off the hill with wind. And then it was just World War III up there. Get down the hill, get down the hill. Just one of the worst experiences I've ever had in my life. But as you said, your Flagstaff experience was different because on December 15th, that phone rings.
Yeah. So I'd been traded in mid-November.
Yeah.
basically met my teammates for a week and a half before we going on this camp. And about a week and a half in, I was injured at the time. I had an immune disease in my eye that I was trying to figure out what that was. And we went out for dinner at a teppanyaki place in Flagstaff. And my brother started calling me a couple of times on my phone. And I thought, oh, that's a bit weird. He doesn't. Me and my brother don't talk on the phone. We do now, but back then, getting a phone call from him was bizarre. And, then I sort of got a tap on the shoulder, and Shano, because I gave before we left was I'll give your family members Shane's number just in case they need it. Tapped on a phone call from Shano, and it was Nat. Sorry, Nat was on the phone, and Nat said, basically that Josh had rang Nat so Nat could get in contact with me, and that my dad had just passed away. And part of the phone call was my mum was at my auntie's house doing a move, and my brother didn't have my auntie's number, couldn't get a hold of my mum, but I had my auntie's number. So then I called my auntie from Arizona to get mum on the phone, and then I had to tell mum that dad had passed away. And it's still a memory that sticks with me because it was just my mum just like harrowing on the other end of the phone. Like, there's one thing of losing a parent. There's another thing of losing a parent when you're on the other side of the world with a bunch of people you've met a week and a half basically earlier. But I was very lucky that the footy club were unbelievable. They sent someone back with me to make sure I got home. And, incredibly tough. Nice. Part of my life. My dad was a massive influence on especially my footy, as we've spoken about before. I grew up at the footy club basically following my dad around in terms of where he coached and the players he coached. And then he ended up coaching my brother, then coached me. So just a massive influence on my sporting life and my footy life specifically, and then more broadly just as being his son. But, like a wild,
crazy,
wild little period of time in my life, being traded, having injury, immune disease that we thought might have been cancer, which wasn't in the time, and having dad pass away all in my first 3 months of being at the footy club.
It's like, what the fuck? This is
why? Crazy. Yeah. There's still elements of now these days that, I wish he was still here, because everything that happens in my life is sort of and I'm sure a lot of people would sympathize with this, but everything that important happens in your life, you always think back to your dad being there. So obviously just had Ruby a year and a bit ago, but then it sort of brings back up that he's not here. And
it's tough.
Yeah.
Fucking earth it is.
And it's a hard part of life. And but it's a great reason of why I play footy and my purpose that I have these days. So
obviously it's so sad, really, and you think why me? Like everything's going okay, and then you have all these incidents happening, like what is going on here? And I've no doubt I didn't meet Eddie, but I've no doubt he's up there looking down just fucking amazed and proud of everything you're doing now. So I'm sorry. I know we've spoken about it before off this podcast, but I'm really sorry you had to go through that. So your first 2 years at Carlton, there's no natural segue for that. Carlton. first 2 years at Carlton, your first year you missed at Brizzy. Second year you play your 13 games. Now you're at Carlton. You've just had this all happen. I feel like there's a couple years there at Carlton where you find your groove at AFL level. And you think, oh, I can now. I'm an AFL player. At what point did everything click and you go, I'm good at this?
Probably somewhere in my second year, I think. It would have been
2014? No, 2015 is your second at Carlton.
2015, I think it would have been. I was talking about that whole off season. I had all sorts of issues. I was on some pretty heavy drugs for the immune disorder that I had. Yeah. I missed the first six games because I had a knee cleaned out really close to the start of the season. Fuck. And I think I came in at round seven or something like that and then played the whole back end of the year. We had some really talented halfbacks at that stage. So I was sort of just out there just playing a role. Had Chris Yaron and Simo who were killing it. And then Zach Tui sitting behind them, and then sort of I was like our just the guy coming in playing a role, and played reasonably well, but like just focused on defending and whatever I did in offense was great, was good, but definitely wasn't sort of setting the world on fire for my first sort of year and a half. And then but I played that whole back end of that year and then played the whole year year after. And I think that repeatability of playing and then gaining the trust of my teammates and then knowing that my teammates loved playing with me gave me a lot of confidence that that I belonged at the level in essence, and started playing some good games over probably in the back end of that my first year of 2014, and then some really good games in 2015.
Well, it helps when you know that you might not be going out to Preston City Oval every second or third week. Like, you know you're going to be in a good stadium and there's a routine and the bright lights of the AFL. So 2016, play 70 games and win a BNF at Carlton. That moment when you're on stage and you've gone through all the shit you've been through, your Brisbane journey, your dad, your injuries, your surgeries, that moment on stage would have been like, whoa, wow.
Yeah, well, to that point I hadn't – like I'd lost my dad. I'm not saying that's a small thing, but I hadn't gone through any of the stuff that was to precede those years. So, like I had some surgeries, nothing of significant major sort of got over the eye issue, but that moment of standing on stage, like I spoke about a little bit before, but like my purpose of playing footy was, or still is to continue my dad's legacy. And my dad was a massive Carlton fan, and I feel like I carry that. He was a massive Carlton fan, massive footy fan, had a huge impact on me. So I feel like I carry him with me on my career, and part of every achievement that I sort of gain as an AFL player etches my last name into the Carlton history books. And I feel like part of the whole reason why I play footy and probably part of the reason why I've got through a lot of the shit that I've been through is because in the back of my mind I'm always thinking about what he would do in these situations, and he would never give up. His work ethic is something that I've been lucky enough to grab off him, and to be able to have that coming through my career. And I think that's sort of the prouder moments is when you – not that you go out setting for a BNF or – any of those awards, but if they come up because you play well enough, it's sort of that goes in that's in the books that can't be unwritten. That's always going to be my name will be next to that 2016 year, and inevitably that's my dad's last name. So that's been a significant driver. We do a lot of work on why you play, like why you do what you do, and
at the club,
or just like the deeper meaning of why you're doing it, and that's been the significant one over my career. Still to this day. Which is probably the two was the BNF and the captaincy were two that as much meant for me, but as much sort of meant for my dad as well. So
I love that. I love when you say like it's when I'm etched into history, football history, Carlton history. It's not my name; it's also my dad's, which is a beautiful thing to do. And
and that's sort of that high purpose of why you play the game. If you don't have that high purpose, it's hard to go to the,
as well.
Yeah, well, it's hard to go to the depth of when things go bad and when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah,
you need something that's bigger than just. I want to play footy to get through it.
Now I think I kind of wish I had a purpose instead of just trying to get a paycheck to go to Universal every month. So
what's the purpose for this podcast?
Just to get a paycheck to go to Universal?
Yeah, sure.
Buy some stringlets?
Yeah.
Do you wear the stringlets up in over in Brisbane? Do you wear stringlets? They just went over your nipples pretty much and they were all loose. Did Brisbane have that kind of fashion or not?
We were necklaces when I was in my early years.
Oh,
like you have like a necklace with like a harmonica and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah, I missed that.
I don't.
No, I didn't get through the necklace phase. All Australian 2017. And you were this year, you're cooking here because I was there and I was playing twos obviously, but I went to your games because I had to go watch the games. Bolts made us. But you're cooking in 2017. All Australian.
2016 and 2017.
Cooking.
Like almost like I know a lot of people like just talking about like you're just playing in flow, like everything was just like on repeat.
Is that how you felt? Everything was
just
coming to you?
Yeah, like everything was just like happening and like was not low energy, but like you just sort of knew you'd go out there and if you did the right, like play the same way, then it just sort of things would happen and probably supreme confidence through those 2 years. And as much as sometimes I don't really like the All Australian Award because it is opinion based. It's sometimes it's nice to be recognised and to have it crossed off over my career. Saying that, I think Jacob Wiedering should have about three.
True. So do I. I'm with you.
I don't think that it's a a fully accurate depiction of who the best team is in that year or who the best players are. So, but it's nice to, for the recognition from external point of view. And I think those couple of years were great, but I know we're probably going to go into this, but I feel like this is the way that I think about it. But like, there's obviously some lessons that I need to learn, and footy has a life has a funny way of equalizing that all out, and it's funny how the next couple of years were pretty tough. Pretty tough.
It's it amazes me, obviously you're all Australian, but it amazes me more that you still wear the jacket out to dinner sometimes just to flex on me. Like, we'll be at dinner, Ollie, and he'll just rock up and I'm like, what are you wearing? He's like, oh, this old thing.
just a Nando's or something.
Is it home?
Is it home, yeah.
Do you ever just put it on and be like, oh, baby. Is it fitted?
I think it's just a stock standard.
Just a jacket.
Fit, but yeah, it's at home. It sits in my cupboard.
Yeah.
It's a funny story. Nick Graham asked me a while ago to – if he could borrow one of my suit jackets for an event. And I sent him through like five photos of jackets that I have at home, and one of them was the All-Australian.
That's the biggest flex. I love that. It's so good. So I do the same. If I ever get in one of those jackets, which I never will because that boat has sailed, you bet your ass I'm wearing that out to like a wedding or something.
Thought I was so funny.
Yeah, it was great. That's a great gag. You don't win the BNF that year. Murph wins it. That's a stitch up.
Yeah, Murph pipped me.
You know what my theory is? That clubs, because you get a bonus when you win a BNF or come top 10, I assume. I would never know. But I would never know, definitely. But I think, personally, clubs skew that so they don't have to hand the bonuses out, which is why you never saw me in a top 10 in the Suns BNF.
Checks out.
But you don't win, Murph pips you.
Yeah. Oh, like it all comes out. I think in 2016 that Simo should have won.
So okay.
I feel like it sort of equals itself out.
Yeah.
I thought my 2017 was better than 2016. Murph played really well in 2017 as well. So
he did,
But they're all, you know, how BNFs work. The voting system is often bizarre.
It actually is weird.
Yeah, but every club's different. Ours at the time was based off your trademark game and
Craigie's system.
Sometimes what that can happen is the better you play, your trademark gets higher. So games that probably the year before I was getting nines or tens became sevens. So the voting systems.
Well, your ceiling was so high at this point that like you said, your 2016 tens were probably now eights.
Yeah. Well, I thought Simo should have won in 2016. Yeah. I was surprised that I won.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's as I said,
swings and roundabouts, mate.
Yeah. I think I've come second.
Yeah.
So three times now.
You came, what? What did you say?
Three times, I think now.
You have, yeah.
I think so.
You have. Did you get trophies for that?
Yeah.
Little ones.
Yeah. Just
you have them as well?
Yeah, they're at home in a box.
Fuck, I wish I was good at footy. I just love a trophy, just any trophy. Peak of your powers, as we just said, 2016, 2017, top of your game, November 2017 preseason, the knee goes. And I haven't done a knee, but I've always said to myself, if I ever did a knee, that would be the end of me because I don't think I could ever come back from just that moment of realization of like 12 months, fuck.
Yeah.
You do one. What's the first thing that you thought? And I know it's hard because it's so long ago and there's a lot happening, but what's your first, when you look back on it now, what would your mindset have been straight away? Because you're at the peak of your powers.
I was definitely in a lot of denial.
Because you're at this point one of the best players in the game.
That's a stretch.
I don't like to compliment you, but you are. You are a top 20-something player, opinion base, we know. But the next move trajectory is – I'm looking at Brownlow type-ish, top 10, 5, and we don't know because that's obviously hearsay, but that was the trajectory.
Yeah, well, I think that to go to the question about the knee, a lot of, denial and disbelief. I probably was in the same mindset of you as if I – ACL, you thought, like, you're pretty much done. That's just the reality of the injury. Back then, there wasn't a heap of guys that were coming back and playing great footy off the back of them. So, but at the same time, probably had a level of naivety about it that I just thought, I don't know why in my mind, that I thought that I'd just come back and be fine and be good no stress. And as I was saying before, life teaches you lessons.
Literally.
So
what lesson do you reckon that was? Because I'd say life's fucked if I'm being honest with that. That'd be my lesson out of it.
I would say...
humbling?
Not saying that I was an arrogant person, but I think there was a level of humility that I needed to learn around. Things don't just happen in life. Like that, like you've got to work and you've got to earn them, and
yeah,
whatever reason. I don't know. I'm not a good person, but I somewhat believe in like your destiny and stuff. And whatever reason I had to learn that lesson. And to be honest, looking back now, it probably taught me some of the bigger lessons in life that I needed to then be able to overcome what was coming next. So before those knees, like if I was going to be sort of in terms of like my trusting circle of who I spoke to about like my life and my mental health and stuff, like I had a very small circle. And before, probably during my first one, I realized that's not a sustainable way of living.
No.
And I went on a process of probably 12 months of letting more people into who I speak to, and went from probably Nat and maybe Lockie Henderson to Puss, my mum, my brother.
Yep.
And bringing more people in gave me a better network that when it happened again, the second one was like pretty brutal, because that was the realization that like this could legitimately be me done. Like to go back to back on knees, like I didn't I didn't know anyone that had really done that.
And
so
pretty much the same time of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been. So were you back training? So you've
I'd done a month of training.
And then incident wise, same?
No. So first one was non-contact, just changed like your typical change direction, just knee buckles out. Yeah. Second one, I was doing like a one-on-one drill with Charlie, and we just bumped each other, and because he's a big boy, a lot of force went through my leg, and then it was just sort of stuck on the ground and just rotated.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like that those the two knees probably one get on top of my mental health, because that was something that sort of hit me in with the second knee, and then two was letting more people in on your life and actually having to go on a process of exploring who those people are, having the conversations that are rather uncomfortable with those people about what's going on in your life and stuff that you're probably trying to hide from everyone. You've actually got to be pretty vulnerable to be able to let other people in. And I look back now and think I was really lucky that happened to me, because it really opened up my mind and my world to being a better friend. What now I would be a better dad, but better son, better partner. Those things lightened me up a lot and gave me a bit of perspective around footy might not be next year, because who knows whether I was going to come back from it. But I definitely needed to learn those lessons at that period of my life, and it's helped a lot.
Man, hard lessons to learn. Like as you're just coming out of, as I said, the peak of what you are, to then go back-to-back knees, and in between those knees, 2017 knee, named as co-captain. So like here we go, here comes a trough, and then fucking back down
knee
again.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, and
it's tough. It's a tough lesson to learn. Like what's happening here?
At times when you're going through it, is you're asking yourself why. Like I think most people do that, but that the poor me, why me sort of narrative is definitely probably part of that period of my life. And my strategy these days is more around you don't get to control what those things are in your life. And I've probably learned that more recently, but things are going to happen to you whether you like it or not. And you don't get the choice of some of it, and some of it you're not going to like. Some of it you'll love. Like some of the great moments in my life, you're privileged to have them as well, but some of it you're not going to enjoy. But the bit that you do get control of is the way that you react to it, and your body language, your mindset, your work ethic, those are things that you can control. And
it's a good lesson.
Yeah. Well, like I probably more recently I've started to use that notion in my brain about like writing your own story.
Yep.
Like Vossi's spoken about it a lot. And it's probably clicked well with me, is around don't let anyone else tell your story. And that for me is like, don't let the events in your life tell them, and don't let other people tell it. So it's, you get to write your own chapter about what you are and how you react and how you do what you do and how you go through life. I use that a lot these days in terms of stuff that happens to me. Like if you go my knees, and then I'm sure we're going to go into my cancer stuff, is like you can't control any of that.
No.
But you do control what you do after those points. And I've tried to use them as lessons to make me a better person, and more recently give back to other people. So
of course. Yeah. Well, as I said, it's a hard lesson to learn, and I'm sure you're grateful now looking back on it. Do you, after the knees, Did you get to a point when you come back? Because you do come back in the preseason of 2020? 2020, yep. Yes, because you play 2020.
Yeah,
when so you come back, do you – I think I know the answer. Not the same or the same? And then does that change the way you play the game?
Different, yeah. I definitely – I move different.
You felt different?
Yeah, well, I move different and I feel different. That's yep. That's definite. But –
So I asked that because you're saying before that the game's coming so easily to you. I could assume that now you'd be like, well, fuck, I can't do that I used to do. Or
yeah,
not really.
Well, and they're good and bad. I'm definitely like not as explosive as I used to be, and change the direction for that year definitely took a lot more sort of thinking time as opposed to just habitual land and go. So that next year after coming back was – I played reasonable footy, but I didn't play very well.
No.
But at the same time, I was still trying to learn with the new parameters of what my body was giving you. And by I mean body, but I mean mind as well. Like giving the stuff that gets shoved in your subconscious mind of you don't even know is there. But then when you go and change direction or do something, then like it gives that apprehension. So trying to work your way through that was tough. But I think I've now learned that there's just aspects of my game that's different, and that's okay. That's as you get older, that just happens. Generally, whether it's injury-based or age in terms of explosiveness and speed and stuff. So you just got to find ways to adapt your game to what the demands are. And, I've got completely different mechanics of how I change direction. The boys all take the piss out of me because I went to the
States.
What
is it, just like semi like, trying to turn?
Like just like the little bits like you cut off different feet and you
– Yeah. So you do that now subconsciously though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I do it subconsciously now. But when Andrew Russell killed me when – obviously went over and saw Bill Knowles in the States and came back, and he was fascinated with some of the change of direction stuff that we did. So then we started trying to teach the boys how to do it.
Mm.
But then by teaching the boys how to do it, you know what footy clubs are like. So then I'm out the front teaching them how to change the direction off your other foot and like just got
– shreds torn off.
Still to this day if we do like a change of direction drill –
they're just like, what the fuck is this boy doing?
Like Sauce and it's like a couple of the other boys will yell out like, turn off your inside foot, dog.
So you can't, mate. I generally cannot. It's built in me. It's ingrained in me.
But, it's just different. It's back to the question. It's just like your body's different, but that adaptability of being able to play in a different way is just part of what you've got to get through.
Well, at this point, at least you're back in this part of your journey and all the lessons you're learning. And you play the first, I think, from memory, it was around 15 games, and then the diagnosis of testicular cancer.
Yeah, so that year was, again, a bit of a chaotic year. We came in, played one game in front of no crowds. And
COVID year, yes.
COVID year, so we played Richmond against in round one, and then we didn't even know if we were going to play. Like the night before, I remember the night before watching TV at home, and like Gil McLaughlin came out at like 8 o'clock at night being like, nah, the game's going ahead. So like that was literally the night before the game, so... and then by the end of that weekend, footy was done.
It was done.
So then we had another eight. So I played one game back for my knee, then had about 10
weeks
off.
About training. Was that weird, that game?
It was
spooky?
Strange.
Yeah,
like, strange. Like probably it just got a bit more normal because we did it a few more times. But
did they put sounds in the crowd?
Nah, not at that stage.
Oh, they didn't. They do that eventually?
They did it for the TV, not for us.
Oh, okay.
So for us, it was just like sort of playing at training. Like you could hear everyone's voice and yelling and screaming and the communication was much easier, but I think it was after maybe like 3 or 4 weeks, they're like, the telecast needs something here.
This is so quiet.
And they had the crowd noise. But that year was just chaotic. Like 8 weeks preseason training at home, like just like running up and down my driveway, trying to get ready to play AFL footy. And then we go to the hub, and then we're at the hub. Two questions before the like noticed a lump on my testicle in the hub. Checked with the docs, they thought it might be a cyst. So we're driving home from Gold Coast back to Melbourne. And he basically said, like, if it's not better by the time you get home, like, we'll just go and get it checked out. And we got the whole way down to Sydney. Then we had a night in Sydney, and I was laying in my hotel room and just started aching. So just aching, like hurting.
Deep ache?
Like a deep ache. Yeah. And then I got like a cold towel, put the cold towel on it. Didn't really do anything, so I like warmed it up, put a warm towel on it. That didn't do anything.
What was it for? Just something.
I was just trying to like therapeutic, like because it was hurting. Like, I didn't know what I was
like
doing.
Like an ice pack on it.
Like sort of like an ice pack. Yeah. Not a great spot to pick up an ice pack.
His balls.
So then like that happened, and then the next day we pretty much Nat just drove from Melbourne to Sydney in a
day. Back.
Got back, like the next day, I think, got booked in for an ultrasound, went and had my ultrasound. Then got a call when I got back, well, when I was on the way home, had to pull my car over. Got told that I have testicular cancer. On this phone call, he told me a bunch of details. I didn't listen to any of that.
Just tell me the main bit.
Then cried the whole way home, got home, then had to tell Nat. Then had to call the doc back because I was like, mate, I didn't hear a word you said after said Ken. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah, tell me again.
So then next day, met with the surgeon. And the day after that, I was in for surgery.
Fuck. Jesus.
Yeah, just like crazy turn of events, really.
Crazy.
Yeah, the first, I think from if my first diagnosis of cancer was probably, I just didn't know anything about it. And I just, all I thought was cancer, death. That's like where it's when my head went.
That's the natural progression. Natural thinking.
Without any knowledge, prior knowledge of, that's not what I know now. But at that stage, I was like, well, like, fuck, am I going to die? Like, that's where my head was at.
Yeah.
Not until I sort of had the meeting with the surgeon and then you get a bit of reassurance that it, like, cancer, really treatable disease, get the op and that should be okay. So then had the op, which like I got about a scar like that big through my abdominal walls, through my abdominal wall to be able to get the testicle out, which then that sort of provided my first sort of next challenge of my career was having all these cuts and stuff through my abdominal walls has been hard for my hips and groins and everything. So, but yeah, had to come back off that. Essentially the rehab was like having a C-section as like for pregnancy. So you're not really allowed to do anything for
strenuous
6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like nothing strenuous for 6 weeks. So then having to go from that to build back up to play AFL footy, was one of the first challenges.
And then you play round one the next year after all that.
Yeah. Played round one after that and then didn't think much of it. I played the whole year pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the year. I might have hurt myself that year. I think I might have done my cinders that year. But
yeah,
played that year. Back end of that year was when the stuff was going down with Teague and the internal review and everything. And I got regular checkups for every three months, CTs and bloods. And it was like mid year scans showed up that I'd gone from one scan having like nothing to stage four. testicular cancer, so it had moved into all my lymph nodes, so it was all through my stomach, all through my lungs, which then sort of set upon the next sort of chapter of the chemo and all that was which was next.
The next stage is like, I mean, again, just your roller coaster is just the only word is fucked, really. I mean, you do two knees, come back, now you're doing two rounds of chemo or therapy or treatment. Did you do chemo the first time or not?
No, so the first time was just the op.
Just the op. So you do chemo this second time. And this is, I remember seeing you because I think we're still in COVID. Yeah. And you especially, because you were going through treatment, couldn't see anyone. You were in the front room of your house, locked in pretty much away from Nat.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you through a window and you looked for the first time. It's not often you see a mate and you're like, fuck, he's sick. Yeah. You were sick. Yeah, like I was sick.
I was
crook, horrible.
Crook. Yeah.
That would have been scary to look in the mirror and be like, I'm not me anymore.
Yeah. Well, like after the first round, like it was tough and I hadn't prepared myself for like the sickness that you had with it. But it was probably the second one when all my hair was coming, like when I could pull just chunks of my hair out. And that was probably the moment where I was like, oh, wow, this is actually like, I'm starting to look pretty grim here. I was paler because we're in COVID, so vulnerable, immuno-vulnerable person. So we made the decision. Well, it wasn't a decision at the start. We got put into two sets of lockdown because Nat was going to the doctors and stuff, doing IVF, which is, smart by us. just really throw it awesome. All in one piece.
Spanner in,
That was in the days it was two weeks of ISO. So we essentially went like 2 weeks of ISO in for my week of treatment into 2 weeks of ISO into my week of treatment. So by the time I'd really seen anyone, other than really saying hello through the front window at my place, hadn't really seen anyone. And incredibly like lonely time. So like it was really just Nat and I just locked in a house. Other than had friends that sort of popped by and came and chatted to me outside my window for an hour every now and then, or playing games with my mates on PlayStation. That was really all I did. And my treatment cycles were incredibly tough. That's just like the regime that we went after with my oncologist was based around not leaving me with any like lung scarring because he didn't want to infect footy. So my brain was already probably shouldn't have been there, but probably should have just been on just getting treated and what's the best treatment. But we both made the decision that there was a treatment that I could go down that was going to minimize lung scarring, so then wouldn't impact my ability to go back and play AFL.
Yeah.
But it was 5 days, basically 5 days straight of about 16 to 18 hours on the drip. You have about 16 hours. You have about 6 hours off, and then you roll again, and you do that for 5 days straight. And essentially just the whole point of the chemo is just to break you down over the space of...
This chemo kills everything, doesn't it, first? It has to kill everything.
It just kills cells. That's its job. Yeah. So by the end of the 5 days, I was at like the absolute pit of where you could take someone. And then we'd spend a week with some drugs to be able to build my immune, like to give me a bit. So basically at the end of my 5 days, my immune system was at basically the lowest it could get to.
Fuck.
So then the next week was built around building my immune system back up, basically to have 3 days of feeling good to then come back in and just absolutely flog it again. And that's sort of, that was the regime. So over the space of, I did four cycles. So the space of that 3 week cycle, so about 3.5 months, was just in this. Yeah. And my memory of it was like Nat would make me like lunch, and I'd, because it was so, it would make you feel so sick. Like she'd make me like a burrito for lunch, and I'd like sit there for 45 minutes to be able to take 5 bites because I just couldn't. I just felt so sick. Stupidly was trying to train through this time as well, which is just.
Yeah, actually, journey came
up. Yeah, I'm an idiot. And like I fully respect that I'm
an idiot. You are an idiot. Right. You're actually an idiot.
Yeah.
Like you're mentally you're not quite right, are you? Like in the nicest way possible. You're not quite, you're different, you've got that dog in you. Like
I look back now, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, mate? Like you're in chemo. Like you're getting
the first person in chemo to decide I'm gonna start getting fit for a preseason.
I was doing some stupid shit. I don't know what story I was telling myself in the head, but like we were going through an internal review and I was logging in on Zoom meetings from the hospital.
Like, mate, just take it easy.
Like I don't know like
what you were thinking.
Like we're getting review findings and we're going through like the coach sacking and stuff, and I'm sitting there on the fucking screen.
Yeah. Just like, with no just hair, just going, how good is this? Yeah, I mean.
And then in between that, going for runs, like trying to punch out a run.
Mate, you're off your head. That is crazy.
The worst part about like one of the side effects to the chemo was like essentially I was like, you laugh at this because you probably think it's me all the time, but I'm pretty much like allergic to sun. So like,
oh, I can see that now.
It's a low hanging fruit. But at the time, like if I went out into UV light, I would like break into hives.
Your skin though was like raw chicken skin.
Yeah.
Like it's the same texture and same color. Yeah.
So I was like going to run, and I could only like, I think it was by like maybe just before my third cycle, I went for a run. So I was sending my run into like my group at the club, and I went for a run and, I nearly passed out on the run, and I went home and like sat in the bed, and Nat's like, you're all right. And I was like, oh, I think I just overdid it then. And she's like, yeah, you're not running again.
No shit. So you telling anyone that you're running or not? So the doctor says, hey, mate, how are you feeling? Yeah, I'm pretty good. So just 8K run, always cook yourself.
Well, the doctor said you can do light exercise, which I
took. Okay, an 8K run is just not light exercise.
Just
half marathon.
No, I was trying to complete running sessions that the boys were doing, but not to the intensity that they were doing it.
Yeah, I mean,
but stupidly, light exercise probably meant go for a fucking walk. Like,
yeah, and you're pumping out beans for parade 8K runs. Mate, wild. And then even more wild is you rock up pre-season and decide that, well, I think you probably got ticked off at this point, but your pre-season, you rock up, and I probably jumped too far here, but the club makes a decision to take the captaincy off you and give it a crip of soul. Did you think you could still captain though at that point, or did you semi-agree with the club, you know what, maybe I should step away and focus on getting healthy and right and back?
Yeah.
Because I looked at it saying, I still think he's the leader of the club as a fan, as a supporter.
I think like hindsight now, I definitely think it was the right call. I wasn't in a position to be able to, like I didn't even know if I was going to be able to get back and play. Like in my mind, I thought that I was 100%. going to come back and play. But like, realistically, I probably who knew, to be honest.
Because you hadn't really missed footy. You were just sick.
Yeah, I was just crook.
Yeah.
But it was just the unknown of like, there's not, again, it's you're sort of in uncharted territories that like guys come back from hamstrings, guys come back from cars. Like not too many people have chemo and then come back and play. So it's like, who really knew? And like, I think Cripp's an unbelievable leader, and I think he's taken, without me there with him, I think he's grown significantly. And I think that he's like, I also don't really mind anymore. I know my role at the footy club, and as you said, like I'm still a leader of the club, regardless of what any of the titles say. And but it definitely took me some time to come to terms with what that was going to look like. And I know my role at the footy club, and I know that it's really valued now. Yeah. And the initial shock of it all was pretty full on, but now I'm probably so content and happy with where my life's at, and comfortable with what my role is and the people that I'm helping. And by me stepping down allowed like guys like Weeders, who like is like a little brother to me, so being able to have him step up and stuff has given me a lot of joy. So
it's always that jolting though, that like, oh shit, maybe again another seed of like, maybe I'm not, maybe these 8K runs are and losing a captaincy, they're probably telling me that I should slow down and focus, and maybe I'm not going to come back, as you said. But at this point, your dad's passed away in your career. Your dad's passed away. Two knees, two bouts of cancer. Surely now everything's in perspective. You're just going, if I go back to footy, great, but my life is now, everything's in perspective. Footy's in everything. At the start of my career, I wanted to be the best player, and if you're not with me, you're against me. I'm going to drag the footy club to wins and success. Now you're like, you know what? Footy is footy and whatever.
Yeah, elements of. I think it's still, to this day, even probably coming to Ruby, it still taught me more lessons around it.
Yeah.
Like that on the back end of that my chemo, I probably went into overdrive of like, I'm going to get back and play. And like, that's where my head was at. Like I threw everything into getting back playing playing round one that year. But I definitely reckon that as I've grown through these years, as I said before, I'm now at a stage where footy isn't everything, and it's given me a lot of distance and a lot of enjoyment in footy, as opposed to just like expectation of trying to make 1% games. And now I love just going to the club, and I'm enjoying, which probably I think a lot of players when they get older would be like this anyway, but you enjoy going in and the environment for what it is, because you know that it's actually not forever. You get to 30, you've done a good job. So every year past 30 is sort of like, sports science and stuff is unbelievable this day. So players will play longer than they have, but you do know that footy is somewhere near the end at some stage soon. And you don't want to spend the back end of your careers, back end of your career not enjoying the environment for what it is. And off the back of all those injuries and stuff, definitely sort of solidified that,
You just said before that, in your mind, you were like, I'm playing round one. And you started telling these people that you let in close to your circle that you're playing round one. And when you told me you had no hair, your skin was like a raw chicken, and the wind could knock you over. Yeah. And I said, this guy's off his dick. Like, you are so sick, mate. You're not going to play round one, you rock up and play. Surely, did you surprise yourself being like, I'm not human? Like, this is crazy. This is crazy that you're playing round one.
At the time, there was in my mind, there was no way I wasn't playing. So like now, if I'm looking back now, how I was able to do that sort of 3 month period of going from, as you said, I was 8-9 kilos underweight. I had done a few runs while doing chemo.
Yeah, a few 8K runs.
They didn't help me that much when I was trying to get back to running. But also had Andrew Russell tell me, he said, I don't want you running for your joints. I don't want you running until you've got your weight back on. So there's no point in running. I actually thought we thought that it was going to do me more damage than it was going to help me to run with no muscles on like on my legs, for my knee joints and my ankles and stuff, and even my soft tissues. So I finished my chemo in, I think it was like mid-November or something along those lines. And I spent the next sort of 5 weeks just eating and like doing light exercise to put some size back on, going to the gym.
Yeah.
I didn't run until just before Christmas.
Yep.
And then
just late in a preseason.
Yeah. So like December 20, and then I played. I played in the VFL practice game. I think our season started like March 15th. So I think I played it like the 2nd of March or something.
So your goal with the club was that you say at the start, I'm playing, they go, you're kidding yourself. Then it comes more of like a realistic target. They say to you, let's get your body right because the footy's going to be okay. And if you get your body right, we'll play you. Is that how it kind of went?
Well, Vossie tells this funny story of he got the job and I met him in the park out the front of my house in Richmond, which is sort of my meeting point for a little bit. He's like, oh, what's your goals for next year? And I was like, oh, I'll play round one. And he tells a funny story of like in his mind, like he was in the person. He was like, oh, that's an awesome goal, blah, blah, blah. And then he's sitting there in the back of his mind, goes, there's no fucking way he's going to do this.
No way. It's just naive. I think it's just, and not because it's in your nature not to think like that, but I'm like, this is so dumb that he thinks he can do this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it probably is. And still to this day, it's funny because everyone says like there's always been this preseason myth, like not myth, but like the preseason of like you would have heard in footy, it's like you need to do 80% of preseason to have a good chance of playing good footy during the year. I didn't train until basically the start of Feb. I did a calf in the middle of this somewhere after Nick Graham's wedding. Did my calf, so I missed a week of training there. But I essentially went from December 20 in 2 and a bit months. Went from not running at all to playing AFL footy. So,
and then you come runner up in the BNF.
Yeah, and then played every.
That is so fucked, mate. Do you know how fucked this is?
Played the whole. Ended up playing the whole year, every game. Which, to be honest, it was part of my goal. Once I played, it was sort of like I wanted to bust the myth of the 80% preseason. So
now you can tell them all the time, like, I don't need that 80%, mate. Like, I don't need that.
It's great.
It's great
for telling the story as I get older that I don't need to do the whole program.
That's just just crazy. Like, to have such a good year. I want to talk about that round one, that goal. In the moment, because it was so just beautiful and perfect. In the moment when that 50-meter penalty gets called and you go inside the forward 50 into your range of kicking, which is about 30 meters.
I could give you a big ball.
Did you sense what that meant to the people that have been behind you, yourself, your family, cancer survivors, people who have had some kind of cancer in their life? Did you sense this occasion of like, if this goes in, this is big?
No.
You were just playing.
I was just playing. I don't know whether everyone does this, but like one of the skills like that I have is to put everything aside. When I go out and play, I just go out and play.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too much about, like, I play the game quite broad and I'm thinking a lot about like scoreboard setups and like scenarios and games. So I don't really have much time to think about anything outside of that. Yeah. So at the time, no, but I've definitely got an appreciation from it now, just the way that everyone reacted and my teammates, my like family, friends,
it was
people
crazy
around the state. Like there's a bit of vision that I look back on now. It's like I take a mark late in the game. And the camera sort of pans back and the whole of the crowd behind me stands up and applauds, which is like pretty cool to like think back now. And that memory is like just etched in my brain of like just one of the most unbelievable. One, the journey to get there, and I'm still in a little bit disbelief of how I was able to do it. But then to go out there and play, I played well, and then to have the moment of like Vossie's first game. We hadn't beaten Richmond in 10 to 12 years. Yeah. Added on layer of that was the goal and the way we played and the way we finished the game. Like it's just a beautiful footy moment.
And especially after everything you've gone through, like this is just like – the journey had to lead me here.
Yeah. And like, it was just a really, as I was saying before, like life gives you great lessons and some of them are great and some of them are really bad. And I'd been through a lot of bad ones that, that I'd been able to sort of come across. And then to be able to have that as the other way, just a really cool moment to be a part of.
Mate, it's actually like, I don't know, like just you as a human, unbelievable, everything you've gone through. There's not many players that come out of the AFL, even players who do play 300 games that leave an impact on people, fans, no matter you go for Carlton, no matter you go for Collingwood, no matter if you're the one Suns fan, there's not many people who can leave an impact on all the AFL. Is that something you go, if I don't win a flag, I've left my mark here and my career is content. I know you said it a bit before, but surely you look at what you've done for the game and what the game's done for you and go, this is pretty cool.
Well, I think that's it's definitely something like you don't set out to do that in your career. No. And I would be like every other AFL player that wants to come in and win Brownlows yeah. and play 300 games and stuff like that. And it's taken until, yeah, probably recently where I've now realised that like my impact on footy is greater than winning premierships and BNFs, and I get a lot of enjoyment out of that and being able to have an impact on people that are generally doing it quite tough, and to being able to being the inspiration of what can be done when you're going through a really shit time. And a lot of people, it's like a lot of cancer patients and stuff going through a horrible time right now. But the amount of stories and messages and stuff that I get off people that like have come out the other end of their cancer diagnosis and have like in the pit of it, were thinking about like watching me play footy and thinking like what can be. Like I met a kid the other week when I was handing over the checks for the Jim Steins Award, and he essentially like when he was going through his testicular cancer battle was like, I was giving him, I just had Ruby and I was giving him hope about having still being able to have a family. And wow. It's like that stuff is like, it does touch you and it does make you feel that you're having an impact. And that's probably why I got to the stage where I feel like I've succeeded regardless of whether, like a lot of my mindset early in my career was like, I need to win a flag. Like that's what the mindset is around the AFL. Yeah. It's like, if you don't win a flag, your career is not successful. I don't think that's true, but it's taken a while for me to even get that narrative out of my own head of like, if I don't win a flag across my career, I see my career and as a complete success because of the impact that I've had in other areas. And as I said before, it doesn't stop the drive and the want to win and taste that success and taste that moment. But it does make me feel okay that when I transition out of the game, whenever that is, that if it doesn't go to the ultimate goal, I'll be okay with that, and I'll be okay to walk away with the game on my own terms and be fine with what I've done.
Mate, you're an amazing human being, and it's as we just spoke about, and I hope everyone who listens to this can appreciate just the amount of stuff you've gone through and then coming out the other side, and now there's still this thought process and mentality to be like, I'm going to do more for others and help others when you could be so self-inwards and I got to look at my own backyard and I got to get as much as I can out of my career. It's a credit to you. I want to talk about one more thing before we talk about this year, because I'm very excited about the lids coming off. Brisbane, prelim, first quarter. I'm fucking off my head at home. I'm thinking I'm booking for grand final tickets. Crazy. Let's talk about first quarter. Crazy. Because you wouldn't have done a lot in the first quarter in terms of not coming your way at all. Oh, here he is. I was setting everyone up. I'm the reason for it.
I kicked a goal. I set up.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Goal assist for the first goal.
Yeah.
Because I'd done my shoulder the week before.
Yeah.
I was sort of playing a bit out of position. I couldn't play inside mid because I just wasn't confident enough to bash and crash in there. So I played a bit more outside role. But, yeah, that first quarter was crazy. We just played the exact version of our brand that, and it, like we just were able to like do that, and like
they had no answers first quarter.
And credit to them, like, and this is why they've been up there for a while, and that would bury a lot of teams. Like what we did in that first quarter, and the nature that we played would bury a lot of teams, and it didn't bury them. And then their ability to change the game really hurt us, and our inability and probably our inexperience to be able to deal with what they then threw at us was. Probably showed the difference between a side that was in there the first time and one that had been in prelims and failed for a number of years before that. So
crazy. Because as you said, like this was literally your first final 2 weeks before that and a lot of the boys' first final. So to have that experience of being like, we've gone and kicked the team in the teeth up in Brizzy, and they'd be like, okay, there's a tsunami coming back. That's going to be. But that's leads me into this year. Let me ask some rapid fire questions first for this year. Do the boys talk about me?
No.
Okay. Do they like my post-game videos about lids coming off?
They find the post-game videos very, very humorous. But
when you lose, do they like them or not?
Yeah. I think they just find them hilarious.
Love that. Do they ever talk about me, and was there any word pre-game about marching an army of blue baggers over the bridge?
No. I would say no, but like maybe.
Okay. Do you – don't just give us an answer because you want to – actually, no, give us that answer. Can the Blues win a flag this year? Are you going to say yes, but in your heart of hearts, do you look at the competition and go, we're as good as any, we can do that?
Yeah, well, I think we're one of the better sides in the competition. But it's a long year and AFL footy is a bloody hard game. So you've got to have the appreciation that there's a lot that's got to go right for you to be able to be swinging at the right time of year. And like you look at us last year, what did we lose, 10, 12 games, and then won 14 straight playing a prelim. So you can't just assume that because what happened last year is going to then happen this year. And we're confident of where we are as a footy team, and we're confident in what we're doing and what we're going to present. But we've also got an appreciation that every other team's doing the exact same thing at the moment. And we feel like we're in the top echelon of the teams, where that lands us and what that ends up doing later in the year. Who knows? But we've definitely got what we believe we've got, what it,
of course,
the brand and the players to take us.
And that was a loaded question. Obviously, you believe it, you wouldn't be playing if you didn't. But do you feel now that you've done so much good stuff last year and there is this real hype, do you now feel it from externally? Because there was a lot of people coming for you your whole time you've been at Carlton now. Do you now feel this pressure of like, well, now you got to be good after everyone was saying, stop being shit?
Yeah.
You know?
There's an interesting sort of dynamic that's in footy, and Carlton's definitely probably on the – there's a few teams that are like massive supporter bases and very passionate supporter bases, and just a lot of interest in what they do. Like, that's just what it is. And we've probably tried over my career, we've tried everything from ignore the external media to embrace it, to go out and say that you're going to win finals, and then to sit there and say, no one talk about anything, it's outside the four walls. The reality of what happens these days, and we've done a heap of work on it because we've had to, is you've got to embrace and understand that there is an external expectation on your footy club, and you can't shy away from that because it's not a healthy way of coping.
No.
The important thing is where you put your focus internally. And expectation is it's a funny word, because like what are expectations? They're just other people's opinions.
Yeah.
So I think being able to nail it down internally and about what you're actually going after and what are the important things to you as a group, that's the important stuff. As I said, you can't shy away because there's a storm outside, and
massive
whether
one.
That's good or bad, like
I'm in it, mate.
Yeah, I
know. I'm in it. Dick.
You're leading
Trust
it.
Me. Yeah, I'll be
but
no, it.
That's what makes Carlton the great team to play. Like we have amazing fans that create that environment, and like our crowds at games and stuff are wild, and that's some of the great parts of footy. But you can't let the external impact internal in terms of where you're trying to go as a footy team. And like last year I spoke about the fire earlier, we went down, it was like that elements was like, okay, this is all happening, accept that that's part of footy and accept that that's part of what we're dealing with, but we need to put our energy and our focus on something else. We need to put it on something that's tangible that we can actually do day to day to be able to get us to where we need to go. That will then get you in a position to be able to do what you need to do at that back end of the year.
But
it's hard. It's a tough part.
It'd be hard not to get carried away though as well, because now you're in a point where for so long you've been bullied as a team. Now you can kind of push teams around. So I guess it's hard not to feed into that and then feed into this.
Yeah, but they're the exact same lessons. They're just two sides of the coin. One's the bad side, one's the good side. You can't live in those worlds.
Yep.
You can't have that follow you and make the decisions of what you need to do. You need to make sure that internally you're focusing on the right things that are going to get you from a process point of view to where you need to go. Every team wants to win the flag. Every team wants to play finals. And that's
the
just
West Coast.
Like every player does. That's
yeah.
And different levels of like expectation from external of what that is. But internally you can't live. That's not healthy to live that way.
No.
Then you start counting results. You start worrying about other things that you can't control. What you can control is the stuff that's in front of you. And that's the values you have at your footy club. That's what you're going after from a defensive point of view. Like they're the stuff that you actually have to focus in on internally. And if you spend too much time on the outside distraction stuff, although it funds the game and it's a big part of fans and everyone's lives as players and coaches and internal staff, like it's just a dangerous message if you're just going to live on that roller coaster.
Yeah. Equilibrium.
Yeah. one of our great
coaches. One of our great words from one of the great men, Brendan Bolton. Mate, that was unbelievable. Thank you for coming on. And I don't know if it's the first time you've told your story at length, but it's an unbelievable story of just grit, determination. Probably wouldn't recommend the 8K runs going through chemo, but you're just an amazing human. And I don't say enough, and I'm sure we don't, but I do love you. Thank you for being a great friend. Thank you for being the first guest on the DDF Footy Show. And let's hope the Blues win the flag this year, because you can fuck that equilibrium off if you do. So thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Imagine what you could be buying instead. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.